Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Hello, everyone. This is John Vecchione back from a brief hiatus. And at Administrative Static today, Mark and I have been taking a look. This is the time of year where the Supreme Court gets down to serious business on issuing opinions. And so we expect in the next few weeks some of the more controversial cases coming out. But we just had one that was very interesting.
But before you get into that, John, let me just say welcome back. But Harriet and I solved all the world's problems in your absence, so I don't know if you're going to have much to say today.
There's not a lot left, huh? So this is what isn't controversial. It's called Coniglia v. Strom, and in it, the Supreme Court rushed back the First Circuit, which had allowed the following to happen. A man was arguing with his wife, that would be Mr. Coniglia, and what's allegedly happened here is that he waved a gun around, put the gun on his on the table, and told his wife to shoot him now. She called the police, and they came, and they convinced him to go and get a psychiatric evaluation, and they told him they wouldn't take his guns if he did that, and then they took his guns.
They thought that was abnormal behavior to tell your wife to shoot you?
Right. I think that's true.
I think that's safe.
We're not there, so we don't know the manner and all this, but they thought that this was reasonable. And in fact, the First Circuit said this is the sort of thing policemen do all the time. They adjudicate disputes in this way and get people to go and get checked out for medical problems and all kinds of things like that.
And just separate people too, right? I mean,
right, and separate people.
Cooling down period.
But here, this was in the home. And there was no warrant, and he had obviously left. You know, he had left to go to the hospital. So there was no emergent circumstances.
Well, didn't you say she had spent the night somewhere else? And
yeah, she went to a hotel. Exactly. Okay. And so so what the court said here was that there's no exception under these circumstances.
Well, let me lay out a little bit more of the facts here, because I think you didn't say this, that she spent the night at the hospital and then she called the next morning and he didn't answer and she was worried about him, right?
That's
and
correct.
So she called the police to do a kind of a welfare check.
Yeah,
to make
she
sure
said,
that
can you go check on him? That's exactly right.
Okay.
And so he sued. He claimed the respondents, meaning the police, violated the Fourth Amendment when they entered his home and seized him and his firearms without a warrant. The district court judge just granted summary judgment, and then the First Circuit affirmed on the ground that the decision to remove petitioner's firearms from the premises fell within what the Supreme Court had called a community caretaking exception to the warrant in a case called Cady versus Dombrowski, C-A-D-Y. And that was about a car. That case was about a car that had been impounded. And while it was impounded lawfully, the police had gone through it and taken out a gun. So the First Circuit thought this was the same. But what really comes through in this opinion is that the house is different. And Justice Thomas delivered the opinion for a unanimous court. And then there were concurring opinions, which I'll get to in a second. But what the court said here was that, listen, we know that police do a lot of things besides just arrest people. And when we said in Cady v. Dombrowski that there is we understand that they have a community protection capacity, that doesn't mean they can do it anywhere they like. That had to do with the circumstances of where it was. And what you find in many of these Fourth Amendment cases, many, many of them, is that vehicles are different from houses. for a lot of reasons. One is vehicles break down and cause problems on the road for other people. And so there's a lot of things that you can't do. So what the court said in this opinion is there are certain things that you can do. You can take a look at the property from outside it. You can go to the home and knock on the door like a regular person could if you're a police officer. But what you cannot do is go into the house and remove things and basically create a seizure without a warrant. And there were no exigent circumstances here. The Coniglia had gone to the hospital. They didn't have any reason they couldn't have gotten a warrant if need be. And so this case brushes back this use.
And the wife didn't ask them to take the guns. This isn't one of those sort of roommate scenarios where the roommate gives permission for the police to come in and do a search or a seizure.
It's disputed, but what Coniglia claims is that the police did not tell the wife accurately what his wishes were as to the guns. They said he wants them in safekeeping or something like this. It's unclear what actually happened, but that's his allegation.
Okay.
That they misled the wife about taking the guns. So, so the court was pretty clear. They did not want this sort of thing to grow out of Katie versus Dombrowski, allowing impounded cars to be searched without a warrant. So, they went through, and what really happened in this case, which is kind of interesting given the ages of the of all the justices, except perhaps for the very new ones, is that by and large, they are very concerned that cops and police will be afraid to enter homes when somebody is in need of medical help. One of the things that happens all the time in this country is that somebody calls the police and says, you know, I know Joe and he does this certain thing every day at this time and he's not here. Or I meet him every week at this time for this thing and they don't show up. And the person who has an old friend who has steady habits, they call the police. And all the justices seem to be very concerned that their ruling not stop the police from doing this. So Roberts, joined by Breyer, mentioned it. They said the role of a peace officer includes preventing violence and restoring order, not simply rendering first aid to casualties. If there's a need to assist persons who are seriously injured or threatened with injury, that's a different case. And they cite the cases and say nothing in today's opinion is to the contrary. And they join on that basis. And then Justice Alito does the same, and he goes through a whole host of things that this case doesn't touch on. And one of the things he touches on, which I think is very interesting because it's emergent, are red flag laws. So many of states are passing red flag laws where they set up a procedure that you can take the guns of a person who people are worried are mentally unbalanced. And there's some handles on those type of laws that they have the type of protections that the Constitution requires. And what he says here is we're not deciding anything about red flag laws. When those come up, we'll decide it then. But he also focuses on Robert's question about—
But no red flag laws on the cheap here. In other words, you're not going to get a red flag law, a de facto red flag law by expanding this Dombrowski exception.
That's exactly
right.
To
allow the police to sort of do it on their own here.
That's exactly right. You can't just simply go ahead and walk in and take the guns under according to this false pretenses to the other person. And so they are going to look at it. I think what he's telegraphing is that we're not upholding red flag laws here and we're not striking them down. We want to take a look at it with briefing and all the rest of it. And so he goes through what exigent means and, you know, when what they've said about exigent circumstances and how it has to be something where you don't have time to get a warrant. And they all focused on this, that none of the justices thought there was a time component to this. But the one, the person who's concurring.
Well, and the wife never asserted that her safety was in jeopardy, and he didn't threaten the wife, right?
This
was
no.
He had asked her to shoot him,
yeah.
And And he was the one who went to the hospital. So there was never a concern here, as there might be in another case, about her personal safety.
No, no. It was morphing into an assisted suicide case. And she decided not to go with that.
But that could be a different exigent circumstance. Or you could imagine that it might be if there was an ongoing threat or concern for her safety.
I think that's correct. I think that's correct. And so
but you were going to tell us about the other justices.
I am going to tell you about Kavanaugh because what he says is the ultimate touchstone of Fourth Amendment is reasonableness. And that's Riley versus California. It's like a 2014 case. But then he does something, and he does cite case law to some extent. But I think he gives an advisory opinion. What he does is he goes through all the types of things that would be perfectly okay, which were not before the court. So he's basically saying, look, all of you out there, if it comes before me, I'm going to approve all of these things that I now talk about. And he says, this case does not require us to explore all the contours of the exigent circumstances doctrine as applied to emergency aid situations, because the officers here disclaimed reliance on that doctrine. But to avoid any confusion going forward, I think it's important to briefly describe how the doctrine applies to some heartland emergency aid situations, which means I'm about to give you an advisory opinion on what the law is.
But only about the heartland cases, not about anything at the margins.
Exactly. So I did find it pretty funny, because the reason you're not supposed to give advisory opinions is because you want the courts to always have to have jurisdiction, and there have to be a controversy. We don't want the courts reaching out and making law willy-nilly in the ether.
None of those things had been briefed by people either. So he didn't have, both sides presented to him.
I wonder if they hadn't been briefed. But anyway, we'll see. I we'll see if we get any more advisory opinions. And we'll be up in a second with Wynn for NCLA. Welcome back, everybody, to Administrative Static. I'm here with Mark, and I want to crow a little bit. We've had a win last week in the case Mexican Gulf Fishing versus Commerce, and that is a number of charter boat fishermen and their companies, which have sued Commerce and NOAA and the National Fisheries Management Service over their plans to put basically a GPS or an ankle bracelet, as we call it, on everybody who takes people out in the Gulf to fish. Anyone who gets...
You could call it an anchor bracelet.
Yeah, an anchor bracelet. So all these folks who bring out people when you go and you maybe for a party or something, you rent a boat to go take you out in the Gulf and fish for a day or half a day. They want to put a GPS on these boats with no real explanation of what they're getting. And the second thing they've done is they give them an app for their phones where they have to say how much they're charging and how much gas they're using and all kinds of other intrusive business proprietary information. And we filed this as a class action, and the government opposed it. They said no need for a class action. And the judge had a question, and this sometimes happens, but it doesn't happen much. After the briefing, she asks, it's District Judge Susie Morgan down in Louisiana, New Orleans. She asked, well, what do you say about the idea that there could be a problem with either conflicting rulings or with nationwide injunctions? And the government came back. They got an extra brief called a surreply, which you don't always get. And they said, oh, no problem at all, Your Honor. This is the only case filed within the statute of limitations, so nobody could get any other relief because they'd all be time barred. So the reason I'm laughing and the reason that's funny is if you don't want a class action, I don't think you should tell the judge. And I think they were wrong about that f- for reasons I won't go into, but you don't tell the judge that no one will get any relief. And this if she finds out later on that this is an unconstitutional regulation, never mind unlawful, it could be unconstitutional. Certainly we allege that it is, and we intend to prove that. Then all the people who are being unconstitutionally tracked will have no relief whatsoever.
That's right. This is the only boat leaving the dock, Your Honor. But but they missed the boat, so
that's exactly right. So I didn't think that that was a response likely to garner a good result, and it didn't. And so the class has been certified.
Well, not good for the government.
Not good for the government. So the class has been certified, which I think that obviously now we are pressing forward. There's a schedule to brief the various matters at issue and whether the government can do this, whether they did it, whether even if they can do it, whether they did what they was necessary under the law to do it. And we'll be briefing all that and we'll be reporting on it. But I do think that it's big news that everybody with a Gulf, they're called either a reef fishery or pelagic fishery license. If we get any relief, everyone will get that relief. And I think the government trying to prevent that was not in the best interests of the fisheries or of the individuals involved.
And our audience might not know this, but John is an experienced class action counsel, and they also might not know this, but I'm an experienced opponent of class action lawsuits. and so it's, you know, I kid him. I like to kid him sometimes about these class action lawsuits, but he likes to kid me about being a plaintiff's lawyer now. So, we have a good time with it, but this is a genuine case, Vec, where I think even folks who like me, who may be skeptical about class action lawsuits, understand that if you're going to give relief to, you know, a handful of folks in the Gulf who are affected by this rule, really all of the fishermen in that same in that same watershed, or that's not the right word, in that same fishery, should get the same relief, right?
Yeah, and I think that's it. We are obviously we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We don't make any money off we don't charge fees or anything, and nobody in this case is asking for money. So it isn't one of those type of class actions. This is merely an injunction to stop constitutional rights and unlawful behavior from going on. So it's not one of these cases where there's some plan to make billions of dollars from somebody.
There weren't really enough raisinets in my box.
Exactly. That's so this is really, it was meant to address a problem. And we said this in our briefs. Here is the problem. We have found in many cases that you win a case for a client and then the government saunters on like nothing happened. It's like one of those, I always say, it's like one of those shows where the comedy show where the guy takes a huge pratfall, rolls down and then jumps up and says, "I meant to do that," and walks on like nothing happened. Since there's many districts and there's 11 or 12 circuits, depending on what you think of the federal circuit, the fact is they decide to fight everywhere, every time, and never acknowledge that a court's ruled against them. And so I guess they intended to do that again this time, Mark. But you know, winning once against the government is not enough, apparently.
No, it's not. And here you have so folks may not understand the geography of the Gulf of Mexico and how it relates to the federal circuit courts. But the 11th Circuit covers Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. And the 5th Circuit covers Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. So you could have different judgments coming from those two circuit courts of appeals if you didn't have this judge deciding the issues for everybody in the class. So that's what we're avoiding by having a class action, is having to sue in both of these different jurisdictions, because the government has shown, as Vec just said, that you can win one place and they won't necessarily roll over and treat that victory as being valid outside the jurisdiction where it was obtained.
Right. And people always wonder why you pursue cases all the way to the Supreme Court. You often do it because that's the only way the government will acknowledge, all right, well, the Supreme Court covers everywhere we are. So I guess we have to stop for a little while. Although
we'll cry uncle now.
Although I have to say, in that we talked a little bit about the FTC case on disgorgement, whether they had it or not, and they're still fighting. They're fighting rear guard actions all across the country on AMG that we've discussed before. So they don't always roll over even with a Supreme Court victory. So that's why people like me and Mark have to bring these kinds of cases, and our clients have to be brave and patient enough to do it. And that's another thing we have, is we do have great clients who are willing to stand up for themselves and go through the trouble of doing this. And
let me ask you a question. In fact, why should people who have never seen the Gulf of Mexico, who don't go out on boats, why should they care about this issue? Why? Because, what's the significance of this class action has been granted? That's the victory we're talking about. And again, the merits of the case have not been settled. All that's been settled is that the court is going to let it proceed as a class. But why should people elsewhere care about that?
They should care because what's at stake here is whether the government gets to follow you around at all times and monitor you. I call it the panopticon, after a philosopher, Jerry Bentham, created this prison that he thought would be great to rehabilitate prisoners, where they would be watched at all times but couldn't see their watcher. And he called it the panopticon, and it's very creepy. And what the regulatory state seems to want to do, as the price of following everyone around because of GPS, because of drones, they want to follow you all at all times just because you're regulated. And some of our Colorado people have I've been on interviews, and they say, well, what if I had a hunting license and I was allowed on federal land to hunt? Could they put a GPS on me just because I had a license to hunt? Well, under the theory of the government here, yeah, they could make sure. I don't know. They won't even really say the real reasons they want to do it. It's better. You know, it's just better. But if you are not a lawbreaker, if you haven't been violating the law, why are they entitled to do this? So I think that everybody's right not to be constantly monitored by the government like we used to think of a Soviet state. And I'm sure that the folks opposed to the Chinese communist government as well. You don't want to be watched all the time. It's not free men are.
No, that's a good point. That's exactly right.
And so it does affect everyone, because as as regulation expands, they want to then say, well, you're in a regulated space, so all these constitutional rights fall away, all these privacy interests fall away. And we can't have that. We may need regulation for certain things, and people may vote for regulation for certain things, but they're not voting for everyone's constitutional rights to go away merely because some activity they engage in is regulated. That would be a disaster for liberty and freedom. And that's why we're bringing this. And that is exactly how my clients feel. And they'll tell you that straight out. That's what they feel like, that they call it the ankle bracelet because, you know, you don't get.
I think you should get him to adopt anchor bracelets. See if you can get him to start talking about that. I like that. I want that to stick.
That's true. And usually, I guess, when you have an ankle bracelet, you also have home confinement. Government's going to say, it's not like that. You get to go out on your boat wherever you want. We just watch you.
You can drag your ball and chain around. You know, it's allowed.
That's exactly right. So I do think that it's also important that this ruling is important because it does put down a marker that constitutional rights that apply to everyone, why shouldn't there be the whole class of people affected by it? And this class, if I haven't said, it's everybody who holds a reef or pelagic license from the government. Because this, it's important. I think we're going to talk about migratory birds later. So it is important that
yes,
we say
are.
what we're not challenging. And we're not challenging that the government's allowed to monitor the fish stocks. So one of the things you do on this app is you put you tell them what fish you caught. We don't challenge that the fish, that they can have either log books or something like that to know what fish.
Yeah, they do that now with paper logs. They've been doing it for a long time,
right? In Alaska and places like that. So and so this is not what they can. Proper regulation is not what we're targeting, but no reason to take away constitutional rights while you're doing it. And we'll be back in a moment.